I'm Chuck Patrizia from Paul Hastings, representing Doral Bank. The issues before the court arise under a summary judgment granted by the court below in interpreting an interim servicing agreement between my client, Doral, and Freddie Mac. The court below erred, in our view, repeatedly in its issuance of the summary judgment. It erred in determining that Freddie Mac's decision to terminate the interim servicing agreement, or the ISA, early was not, in fact, a permitted alternative performance, specifically bargained for and specifically agreed between the parties in Section 2.17 and Section 1.1 of the ISA. The court below also erred in determining that the agreed fee was a penalty or liquidated damages and was disproportionate. In fact, Doral and Freddie Mac had agreed that the fee was proportionate and reasonable. Both parties bargained for it. Both parties agreed to it. And in light of the circumstances in this particular case, it is, in fact, proportionate both to the benefit to Freddie Mac and to the losses that were incurred by Doral. The court below also erred in holding that Doral had failed to prove damages. The Doral model is a reasonable method of showing the contemporaneous expectation of the parties in entering into the contract. Indeed, it's difficult for me to conceive of something where the basic rule in contract damages is to look at the expectations of the parties at the time they enter it. What could be better evidence of the expectation of the parties than the very model that they relied upon in determining to enter into the contract and in estimating what their profits would be under that contract? Last, we believe that the court below erred in interpreting Section 2.6 of the contract to require some specific unspecified way of notifying Doral that it, quote, will be, close quote, the interim servicer. In fact, the record below is quite specific that this contract was entered into by Freddie Mac because it needed to have an interim servicer. Even before the parties had executed the interim servicing agreement, Freddie Mac had terminated the prior servicer that very morning. In the circumstances here, unlike perhaps the typical situation that Freddie Mac may have in the domestic situation in the continent of the United States, it needed a servicer. It needed a servicer in Puerto Rico, and it had to have that servicer immediately because it had already terminated RNG. There's no question that Doral was told by Freddie Mac, you will be servicing the portfolio of loans. And in view of the record from July 11th, which was a Friday, through the weekend, through Monday and Tuesday of the following week when all of the parties, including RNG, met, it's clear that there was a notification and a determination that Doral will be servicing and when the exchanges of documents will
be. Is there a date you have said as early as July 11th or July 14th, or is there a date certain?
It depends on the interpretation the court wishes to place on Section 2.6. In our view, the date certain is July 11th. That is the date on which Freddie Mac said to Doral, you will be servicing this portfolio. Undertake all of the steps that are required to make yourself ready to do that.
And if someone had wanted to make a payment on a mortgage on, say, Monday, July 14th, where would they have come?
They would have gone to RNG because the so-called goodbye and hello letters were not yet exchanged. The mortgagor would not have known to go to a different place.
Well, doesn't that suggest some ambiguity as to the effective date of servicing, or at least the possibility that it might not have been as early as July 11th or July 14th?
With all due respect, Your Honor, I think that confuses two distinct issues. The contract itself recognizes that the so-called hello and goodbye letters would occur after the effective date. The contract and the servicing manual contemplate that Doral would have as many as 30 days after the effective date.
But
to
my
send
question
the hello
goes
letter.
To when was Doral to have begun servicing?
In our view, servicing began on July 11th when it started to undertake the steps necessary to have the staff, the resources, the files, and the other materials necessary to conduct the physical other steps of servicing.
I thought you just used the phrase over and over again that they will be servicing it.
They were told they will be servicing. Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
It would indicate they are not servicing it right now.
One gets into this wonderful temporal issue.
But
which
that is the issue in the case. That's exactly what the other side is saying. He's saying, yeah, you will be servicing, but you won't service it until we communicated it to you, communicate for you to begin. Isn't that what the issue is?
It is, in fact, Your Honor. But the point is that
you started out and you told us over and over again, you were told you will be servicing this agreement, which I guess you're saying like right now.
Section 2.6 doesn't say that the effective date is when the servicing physically begins. It says that the effective date is a date that Freddie Mac determines and communicates that Doral will be servicing. That is the language of Section 2.6.
When on that agreement, the Freddie Mac was obligated that 24 months right then under
no,
your
sir.
Argument.
No, sir. That is not our position, sir. We expressly disclaim that.
When they said you will be servicing it orally, it happened then.
It happened then, and it happened in the exchanges of documents over that weekend, and it happened again on the 14th and 15th when Doral was required to go to RNG to be ready to receive the documents. It happened on the 15th when the three parties, RNG and Doral and Freddie Mac, sat in a room and went down the list of things that had to be done and agreed specifically on a schedule by which those things would be done, including the transfer of files and including the hello and goodbye letters.
The problem, though, is even your formulation recognizes the temporal lag between the initial date and the date on which Doral was to be, the effective date on which Doral was to begin servicing.
Yes, Your Honor.
It had to.
It has to. And I think the point on that is to recognize that in the typical situation, which this is not, but in the typical situation, Freddie Mac actually has interim servicers on standby. And it has them in place ready to go, and it quite literally picks up the phone or sends an email and says, this is the portfolio you will be servicing. This situation is not that. They didn't have a standby servicer in Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico has an unusual system in the sense that people literally go to the bank with their mortgage books and in many instances with cash and pay the mortgage. The result of that is that in Puerto Rico, you have to have branch offices, you have to have staff, you have to have all of the other circumstances to service 46,000 mortgages who come in sometime between the first of the month and the 10th or 12th of the month and pay the mortgage. So when Freddie Mac saw that circumstance in early July, Freddie Mac came to Doral and said, we need you as an interim servicer. You will be servicing this portfolio. Freddie Mac and Doral negotiated the agreement, and on the 11th, they executed it. Immediately thereafter, Freddie Mac said, you will be servicing. You show up Monday morning ready to get the files. And it's particularly important in that regard, and I would say this to Judge Wynn, Freddie Mac also saw the Doral 8K. And Freddie Mac,
I didn't hear that last part.
Freddie Mac saw the Doral 8K before that 8K was released. And in that 8K, Doral says, we will be servicing a portfolio of these mortgages. So Freddie Mac clearly had made the determination that Doral will be servicing. And part of the exchange inevitably in any interim servicing agreement is arranging the physical exchange of the files. But the servicing services, the activities that relate to servicing, begin when Freddie Mac says, be ready to go, do this, get ready, and come with us on Monday. That occurred on the 11th.
So you're here because, not to be too glib about it, this case is a victim of Rule 56. We see this so much. You know, Professor Miller is probably crying in his office right now. This obsession with Rule 56 in the federal courts, and by the way, you know, Doral filed a cross motion, right?
We did, sir.
Everybody in every litigation files a Rule 56 motion, even though everybody wants a jury trial. So, and everybody agrees that in a case like this, despite the wonderful hard work of the lawyers to craft an agreement that answers every potential question, that's an impossibility.
It is, Your Honor.
It's an utter impossibility.
Every agreement is entered into because the parties think it's good enough, not because it's perfect.
Exactly. So now here we are on appeal. The loser on Rule 56 is the appellant. The winner is the appellee. And it just seems to me that this case is overrun with factual disputes.
There certainly are factual issues that would have been addressed by a jury had the case gone that far. But I think before we go back down to the court below and deal with those, it's important that this court give some instruction and deal with, I think, in particular, the issue of alternative performance. To my knowledge, the Fourth Circuit has not yet addressed that issue, and it's one that needs to be addressed so it's clear what the circumstances are in which a provision of this sort, where the parties bargained for it, agreed to it, and entered into it with that knowledge that there could be an early termination, that needs to be addressed. And I would also suggest the court needs to address the issue of the Doral model and the Reyna testimony in support of it, the notion that it's impossible for a corporate officer to rely on the corporate documents and the corporate knowledge in forming that model. It's just silly.
You didn't even bother to qualify as an expert.
He's not an expert, Your Honor, and he shouldn't have to qualify as an expert.
But that's a response. I mean, it's just a disagreement. In fact, I think at one point he called it a kind of back of the envelope calculation.
It was certainly not a model intrinsically done by an accounting firm to say, here are all the different issues. But it is a model that businessmen rely on.
It's certainly subject to challenge and was challenged.
It certainly could be subject to challenge, Your Honor. Those would be factual issues, and they go to weight and credibility, which should not have been determined by the district court. Those are jury issues.
Mm-hmm.
I had reserved a couple of minutes. I'm happy to respond more if the court pleases. Otherwise, I'll reserve for rebuttal.
Before you sit,
yes, sir.
The district court did grant summary judgment in your favor to some extent.
It did. It awarded a minimal amount of damages, $124,000,
What are your factual issues regarding the grant of summary judgment to you? In other words, you were saying that was an improper grant of summary judgment?
No, sir. The improper grant of summary judgment relates to the failure to recognize the remainder of the damages, the alternative performance, and the additional damages beyond the mere out-of-pocket expenses.
So you're saying that it should have granted judgment in favor of you?
Yes, sir.
So you don't see issues in dispute, facts in dispute? You think
not as to our case, sir.
I see. So you're not asking to send this back because there are issues in dispute. You say that it is all in your favor.
Yes, sir. That's correct. Freddie Mac breached this agreement, and we're entitled to judgment.
What was the exchange you were having at Judge Davis? I'm trying to figure that out. Seems like you were agreeing to some extent that this ought to be sent back because it's wrought with issues that need to be sent back, and yet you say there are no issues. There's no dispute here. This is right for summary judgment. It just didn't go the way it should go.
The issue that would have to go back is the issue of the Reyna model and the additional damages and the appropriateness of the alternative performance fee.
And otherwise, we rule in your favor as a matter of law on the interpretation question?
That would be my preference, Your Honor, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Please the court. William Belane, representing Freddie Mac, Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation. We do think that there is ample basis for finding as a matter of law an interpretation of the contract, but Judge Trenga wound up deciding the case properly on the issue of sufficiency of their evidence on damages.
Do you think 2.6 is ambiguous at all?
We think it is not ambiguous when you look at how the effective date there ties into.
If you read the agreement as a whole, the whole host
of provisions.
It sets out sort of chronologically.
This will happen. That will happen. That will happen. That will happen. You need a specific effective date. If I've got to do a status report, I got to know what the date runs from before my status report is due. And by the way, in order to do my status report, I better have a bunch of files in front of me, because otherwise I can't do it.
Well, more significantly, people have to know where to pay their mortgage.
People have to know where they're going to pay them their mortgages. The servicer has to know when it first has to get the money, pay it over to Freddie Mac if it's principal and interest.
RNG has to terminate.
They have to be terminated. We thought on the 11th that we had an effective termination. Guess what? Unexpectedly for everybody, thanks to an ex-party TRO, which Freddie Mac had nothing to do with, a court in Puerto Rico said, no, you don't. Suspend the termination. everything is on hold. And that changed everything. And it happened at a time when we did not have the effective date we submit. And by the way, I think both our side and their side essentially acknowledge we didn't have the effective date for purposes of servicing. But what you did have already under the agreement was the transfer process, which is under 2.5. There's no question about that. That's why we're paying the expenses. That's why we don't dispute either the expenses.
Let me ask you a question regarding the termination and, sure. And then the formation of this interim agreement. Is it the same subject matter that's the subject of the interim agreement and that which was terminated that was being serviced by RNG? In other words, is the subject matter the same? In other words, could you have both?
You can't have two services at the same time. If that's what you're getting at, there is no question. You have one servicer at a time.
I don't make the argument, but I was only just intrigued with the thought process that if a court were to determine that RNG, in fact, you get the TRO and then eventually that it should have the contract, mm-hmm. does that not by its own nature say you can't contract this with someone else?
Right, or you can't, if you've already got a contract, you can't implement the contract. I mean, this is, if this may be a poor analogy, I may have somebody in the batter's box ready to bat next, but RNG is in the batter's box, and they're swinging at every pitch. They're taking the borrower's money. They're paying it over all the time. The manager
but
may
know, have, you don't mean to suggest
yes, sir.
That these hello goodbye letters would be instantly effective. And
no.
that the August mortgage payment, I'm sure
not.
You would agree
that not.
The August mortgage payment of a sizable percentage of these mortgagors would go to RNG. You know that full well. Our common sense tells us.
Judge,
so, in fact, you can have two servicers.
No.
And you probably always have two servicers as a matter of fact. Because people don't read those letters. They send their mortgage payments to the same people for months after there's been a change, and that's part of the transfer.
But that's why you have an effective date. Between RNG and Doral, there's only one servicer, and that's why you have an effective date.
And only one servicer can have recourse obligations.
Exactly. Servicer recourse obligations.
Actually, Doral was not going to have recourse obligations.
Oh. That's right. It
didn't. That's why you got yourself into this mess.
No. Two different things. And we didn't get ourselves into this mess with all due respect.
You clearly got yourself into this mess.
A TRO has gotten ex parte.
Apparently, you couldn't convince a judge that the breach or the likely breach, that the reasonable assurances weren't forthcoming from from RNG.
Right.
And you know, your whole little plan weeks in the making was totally upset.
By the way, let me clarify something for Your Honor.
Yes.
There's two different kinds of recourse. You're absolutely right that the recourse was always with Doral with respect to what's called representations and warranty as the investment quality. But a servicer recourse, that's what Judge Duncan was talking about. And the servicer recourse, by definition under 2.4, I think it is,
is as of
the effective date.
Fair.
And that's really all. That's all I meant to say. And we can distinguish between what the borrower knows in some respects as to how many servicers do I have versus the contract spelling out, we're doing an effective date.
I get you, but look, Freddie Mac is not a victim here. Whatever that judge did, the judge did on the basis of a factual record and law that you clearly didn't terminate this agreement with RNG in the way you should have.
That certainly was the issue.
So,
and then
so
he
you
urged
brought this on yourself.
A settlement. And then he urged a settlement, and we settled because that was in the best interest of both Freddie Mac and the borrowers. Because the net effect of that was there was continuity in where the borrowers go. The last thing you want to do is to move the servicing to an interim servicer for 1 or 2 months and then move the servicing again to a permanent servicer, which is going to take representations and warranties, right? You also avoid the problem of money, as Your Honor suggested, going to the wrong bank. Bank has to transfer it to another bank.
You know it was going to go to the wrong
bank. Yeah. And the last thing – Well, you're clearly going to have that, and even in a smooth functioning change of surfacing.
Right.
But you can minimize this. I mean, we're talking about law of probabilities here, all right, with 46,000 mortgages. So you certainly want to have as much certainty as you can, both in the hello goodbye letters. But let's go beyond that. It has to do with when it was that Doral was going to first start to have some obligations. And that was the effective date determined by Freddie Mac. And that is clearly got to be one specific date. It's got to be determined by Freddie Mac, and it's got to be given to, communicated to Doral.
The agreement does not describe or establish the manner in which you would communicate the effective date.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
But you don't see that as a dispute of material fact.
Well, it would still be, if they never determined it, then it doesn't matter whether it's communicated. It's got to be both.
Determined it is a dispute of material fact, isn't it?
Well, we denied it. And
I understand you denied it. It's a part of the litigation.
Right. Yeah. But actually, you are absolutely right, because the thing that I think makes it beyond dispute is that even Mr. LeBoy, their servicing department vice president, acknowledged he never received, i.e., no one ever communicated to him a specific effective date. And that's really what we relied on, I think, to say in the end, we've got to win as a matter of law. I can keep pushing this issue, but frankly, Judge Tringa decided this case on a different basis, we think is totally justified, which is, guess what? We know you have $124,000 in actual damages. What do you got, okay, that makes me have to have a trial on all this case? And he said, as a matter of law, he's a gatekeeper. He's got to do this. He'd have to do this even if he had a trial on a directed verdict. He found, as a matter of law, and I think he was absolutely right, you haven't come forward with enough verifiable documents and data to meet the standard, which you have to meet.
Which is what?
Reasonable certainty in your future losses. And he
of
had
future losses or of lost expectancy?
Expect.
But help me with the model then.
Yes.
I think this case really does come down
right to
money. How much Doral wants more money than the actual damages.
Yes.
And it relied on this model.
Right.
So take it.
And we say, never prepared a model before, never had a model to look at in starting. Did it starting with a rudimentary balance sheet. Came up with something. Never showed it. He's got an independent auditor. He's got an outside auditor. Maybe at least show it to the guy. Say, what do you think? Think this model looks good? Never did that. All right. He did this in a couple of days. He did it actually between the 9th and the 11th, which is the date of the contract. Then he puts it aside. He uses numbers, including key numbers, like what the servicing cost is going to be. Where does he get the information? I got an email. I got a one-page email. It's 2065. This is their documentation. Does he know anything about how they arrived at that number or where it comes from? He does not. Is there any other document anywhere that they produce to us that support any of the other facts and figures that they put in his model? And the answer is no. There's not a single document. He was the only 30B6 witness. In other words, we would have been perfectly happy. We give a 30B6 notice on damages. They can bring in three people. If this guy has talked on the phone with LeBoy and gotten information from LeBoy, or talked to somebody in Treasury who never was named and got information from Treasury, fine. Then tell me. You're the, you know, Mr. Reyna, you're a 30B6, and so is Mr. LeBoy, and so is Joe Schmo, who turns out to be the guy in Treasury.
Taking too long to help me.
I'm so sorry.
Is my understanding correct that RNG would continue reporting on its loans through July 28th?
Absolutely.
And with respect to the startup costs, what specifically would Doral have had to do?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What I'm trying to do is sort of quantify what we're talking about.
Right.
It seemed to me that some of the anticipated startup costs, and I'm not sure that it's disputed, but I'll ask opposing counsel, never came into play. There were no notices sent to borrowers,
correct,
third parties. There was no reconciling escrow fund balances.
You got that right.
No
status reports.
Branch offices. So what would the, what in your view would the uncovered portion consist of?
Well, I'm not sure what uncovered portion means, but we agreed to $124,000 because those were the actual costs that were incurred. They did hire 40 people. Some of the work, by the way, is hired just because we think we're going to have to go and ship some documents. I mean, we're talking about both electronic data and hard copy documents, including original documents like notes. So you certainly got to hire people to get all that done, and they sent us bills for that, and we did that. They started some work that would have been used down the road. I think there was some work they did, for example, in maybe preparing the hello letters. And we paid everything they submitted.
So that was captured in the $124,000 actual?
Absolutely. Every penny. And if they'd given us more, we'd have paid the more because the agreement has two.
Is that what you're saying?
And actuals, because the agreement has two pieces to it. Section 2.5 specifically applies to the transfer process, and that's where we were during this entire period. And that's why Freddie Mac didn't say, I'm going to just hand you money because I breached the agreement and you owe it. We did it because under 2.5, they had the right to say, we got to do a bunch of work here to get ready. It's going to cost us money. And, of course, we say we will pay for that. But, by the way, under 2.6, we're the ones that will decide when you'll actually start servicing. Two very distinct pieces. And the payments we made were under 2.5. We'd have been willing to pay more. I think if you look at the record, you'll see. We were ready to talk about paying more. Show us more expenses. He collected expenses up until August 5, Mr. Reyna. He sends it along. If you look at the record, you're going to see plenty of backup for those expenses, by the way. Remarkable distinction from what happened with his estimations, his expectations. You're going to see the backup documents where people from the various departments say, okay, I had this employees, I had this cost, I'm going to send it forward to Mr. Reyna. Mr. Reyna can put it into his model of actual. Then when you look at the rest, his expectation model, I say, okay, gee, where's the documents that back up that up? And that's where all I get is this one email. And after that, nothing whatsoever. So bottom line is what I'm trying to say to you is, if there were actual expenses even after August 5, having to do with them getting ready, the transfer process, we'd have paid it. They didn't put on any proof.
What about the termination of the employees that were hired in anticipation of receiving the business?
We have nothing in the record that tells us, hey,
you recognize that as an actual expense?
Oh, sure. Sure. If you hired 40 people and you wound up having to let them go after and you said, I had to pay him. By the way, I haven't paid him past August 5. Absolutely, that would have been an expense. But they didn't put on any evidence of it. He virtually disclaimed doing so. Mr. Reyna said, after August 5, I never made a single effort to get another expense.
They're interested in lost profits.
And we say, as a matter of look, summary judgment is the time, Judge. With all due respect, part of the point of it is, it's time for you to show us what you got. Because if you don't got it now, don't tell us, well, yeah, but I would by the time we go to trial.
Discovery was complete.
Discovery is completed. They could have put on an affidavit with extra evidence beyond the model. They could have put on Mr. LeBoy saying, let me tell you the support for $7. They could have put on the person from Treasury. They could have put on the people who said, you know what, we had to fire these other people, but we had to pay them for 3 more weeks. They could have put on all sorts of stuff. They didn't. They made a judgment, frankly, I think, because these are skilled lawyers. They made a judgment, I'm just going to go with the model for my expected losses, and on my out-of-pocket, I'm just going to go up to August 5. I'm not going to touch it after that. Now, I don't mind telling you that the inference we drew from that as lawyers is they don't got it. Somebody sat down and did this extra work, and they decided we're not going to put that on. We're going to go for broke. We're going to try to go for 1.1.
We're applying Virginia law here.
It's federal law or Virginia law. I don't think it's going to matter.
The United States.
And I don't think it makes a difference in this
case. Okay, I don't think so either.
Yeah.
You don't need to show damage for a contract claim, do you?
No, but we paid $124,000. We paid their damages.
Well, but suppose it was $124 plus one.
Suppose they didn't
summary judgment wouldn't have been appropriate, would it?
It was appropriate if we say, you tell us it's 124 period, and you don't say, oh, no, it's 120 and another penny, okay? And that's exactly what happened here. We basically threw at them, we're giving you every penny that you showed with a reasonable certainty.
Okay, but here's my problem, a potential problem. If, in fact, you lose on the antecedent legal issue, meaning summary judgment's not appropriate.
Mm-hmm. On liability.
On liability.
Yes, sir.
Then is it your argument you still win on damages?
Oh, absolutely.
As a matter of law?
Absolutely.
Because the model doesn't get them over the Rule 56.
Because we affirmatively raised the damage issue. We put it forward. We said, boy, we see the case. $124,588. Based on your own guy, based on your own evidence, your turn. By the way,
you didn't have a damages expert either.
Right? No, but didn't need one.
Because they didn't designate.
They didn't designate, so I'm not going to cross-designate and hand them something. Right. But beyond that, we said, I see the numbers. It's a fixed number. Let's put it in. Maybe they'll come back and surprise me, and then, all right, I'll have to deal with it. But they didn't.
So what if a jury should reach a decision on conflicting inferences that you effectively communicated to Doral that they were now the servicers?
Right. Right.
No difference in outcome on damage?
No, none whatsoever.
And why is that?
Because their whole case of damages
failure
was put
proof
before. Sure.
So you don't see any of these legal issues as relevant here, whether liquidated damages or penalty and all of that. You don't think any of that is right?
Absolutely not. Now, I think you understand, and I'm afraid to waste more time arguing you out of it, that we actually think legally we win on the interpretation of 2.6, and it makes all the difference in the world. But boy, our view and Judge Trenga's conclusion was none of it matters because Freddie Mac also put in, here's $124,588 is all your damages. Your turn. We don't think you can prove it. And obviously on Celotex, we're allowed to say, your burden, come forward, reasonable probability. They don't do it. And that affects both the liquidated damage argument they have and any other claim they can make. Because when they say, oh, gee, we've got a model, and it doesn't show anything, but it's also for $12 to $16 million. And we say, that's funny. We've got evidence, your evidence, that's firmly based, that's $124,000. Let me think. Is it so wildly out of proportion that this is a disguised penalty? You can call these provision anything you want, this business of this, you know, servicing compensation fee. It doesn't matter what you call it. What's its real nature? And we say, as an evidentiary matter, it is a disguised penalty. You can say, obviously, we had more damages. We can say, that's great. Just put it in, please. All right? Put it into the record so that Judge Davis is comfortable. He should send the whole thing back. They didn't put it in, Judge Davis, and it's the end of the case. That's why the judgment is for $124,588.
Yes,
I've got a red light.
I understand your argument. I think this is it, is that when you're looking at the elements for a breach, that if you are able to determine what the damages are, it doesn't matter if you grant summary judgment for or against them. These are what the damages are. And from your perspective, you're saying essentially we'll pay you those damages and forget to breach this other part of the argument.
Our motion was essentially yes. Absolutely.
So if this stands on damages, there won't be a trial.
We don't need one.
On who's whether or not it's communication or not, it doesn't matter.
Judge
Wynn, damages from your analysis is 124.
Exactly. Pure academic fun for everyone to try a liability case that doesn't matter. Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
Very briefly, if the court please. There were several points that my learned friend, Mr. Belain, made that I want to respond to. He made the point quite clearly, there can only be one servicer. That's true. R&G was terminated on July 11th before Doral even executed the interim servicing agreement. As and after the afternoon of July 11th, there was only one servicer, and it was Doral. Now, the court in Puerto Rico...
But that factually can't be. factually can't be, because you were not in a position to perform any of the functions under the servicing agreement. You couldn't. And although RNG was terminated, it didn't take for whatever reason.
I would disagree with the court.
Well, I mean, could you have accepted a mortgage?
Yes.
Could you have done?
Yes. We could have accepted payments. In fact, under the arrangement that was made.
I asked you that on direct, and you said you could not have.
I'm sorry if I misled the court. My understanding of the court's question in the opening of the argument was whether the mortgagor would have paid Doral. I was thinking of it from the perspective of the mortgagor who gets a hello goodbye letter. If mortgagor came to Doral, would we accept the payment? Yes. We had a account set up, ready to go, ready to do it. And I would say to the court that this is an important issue. In any transfer of servicing, there is a transfer period. There is a period where the expired servicer, the canceled servicer, the terminated servicer is moving things over. And in that same period, the servicer, because there's only one, is taking
files.
We had the files from Freddie Mac. Freddie Mac gave us the electronic files. And in fact, in the record, it's established out of 46,000 mortgages, there would only have been a difference in 12 mortgage numbers in order to service them. We had the electronic files. We had it set up.
So there's no question from your perspective but that summary judgment is the way to go on this case. Either way, it shouldn't go back. I mean, you moved for summary judgment, as did the other side, on damages. The other side having said, okay, even if we lose, if these are the damages, we will pay them. And so there's no question. I'm trying to understand this.
Each
one to go back on the model and go back on other stuff, because you had full discovery and everything is there. So the question is whether an issue of fact has been created. You moved for summary judgment.
We
so
did,
sir. You then said there is no issue here to go for anywhere, as did the other side. So it comes down to a question of law, and that's to be decided here.
We both sides believed that the issues were purely legal. Both sides presented them to Judge Trenga. Judge Trenga disagreed. Judge Trenga thought that there were issues of material fact, and taking Judge Trenga's opinion
on
the effective date,
on the date
issue.
I'm talking about damages. You confuse me when you go there.
I'm sorry.
You're right. He came down and says there's issues of fact. If you guys, at that point, you could have just said, okay, we'll go to trial. But
yes,
you
sir.
Looked at the damages. Apparently the other side looked at the damages and says, wait a minute, here's all the damages are. We'll pay those. And that's why we're here. But you also move for summary judgment, which tells me you say there's no dispute on the facts.
We believe that the model clearly establishes
so
damages
no,
to
under
a,
your
for
scenario,
a reasonable
there's
estimate.
No, there's no cause for sending this back for anything. Either you have summary
I'm
judgment.
I'm happy to say that if the court agrees with me, there's no reason to send it back.
But if they're undisputed, what's going to make them dispute if we disagree with you?
Well, the fact is, Mr. Belain disputes our model. We dispute his interpretation of that model.
But getting to damages, and I do want to point out that I don't think the facts bear out what you told me. RNG was going to keep the loans on its system through July 28th, and then there are notes in the record that set July 28th as the date for merging RNG data to the Doral servicing system. I didn't see anything in the facts, unless you can point me something in the record, that indicates that you had accounts and electronic files set up and ready to receive payments.
In fact, in the joint appendix, and I can provide the citations if I need to.
I'll go back and check.
In the record, what the joint appendix provides is that, in fact, on the weekend between July 11th and July 14th, Freddie Mac provided a set of electronic data. Those files were being set up. We got additional files on Monday the 14th. We had the systems in place to be able to accept them. And in fact, if you look at Mr. McCoy's deposition, Mr. McCoy says that as of the 15th, he expected the transfer to occur on the 17th. It could have occurred that early. The parties ended up negotiating on the 15th and reaching an understanding as to a more specific schedule. That often occurs in the transfer of this authority and responsibility, because you do want to make it convenient. But I don't think there's any issue but that we could have done it. And, in fact, it goes to the point I wanted to make next. Mr. Belain said there have to be obligations. There were, in fact, obligations. As of the 11th, when Freddie Mac said, you will be servicing, Doral was obligated to have staff It was obligated to have resources. It was obligated to have computers. It was obligated to go to Fidelity and get the computer program again to take 46,000 mortgages. There were obligations that Doral was fulfilling. That's what a servicer does. It commences
right.
That process.
Those are the hard costs that you could submit to submit for payment?
They were, in fact, some of them. Now, Mr. Belain complains that, well, as of August 5th, Mr. Reyna did not go back and seek getting additional information. We were told, you're on hold. You have to keep the staff. There's no question the staff was still there. The model incorporated what those costs would be, what those costs were. And apparently Mr. Belain's complaint is, well, you didn't show me the W-2s. You didn't show me the W-4s. I don't have any of that specific information. He didn't ask for that. And part of the problem here, and I would raise the court the Pine Creek case, on a summary judgment, when there is damage information which is put into the record, it is incumbent on the other side to come forward with evidence. They came forward with none, and Mr. Belain has admitted they had none.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We will come down, Greek Council, and take a brief recess.